Asia, well, we're still sort of getting over that.
What about the Arctic? I mean,
not really a lot of countries up there.
That's fine. I mean, we could just bomb stuff.
Yeah, I suppose.
And it like a show of power for all the countries that are trying to like claim area there. And we can like maybe rationalize it as some sort of like habitat reconstruction or something.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
Well, I would like to have different questions asked, but I'm sure we'll just get the same things that we usually do. It might be lively, though. It might be interesting. I'm looking forward to Bernie Sanders. I think he brings the most conversation to the table.
Green bombing. That's great.
So, green bombing.
Yeah, I like that. It's like sustainable.
Wow. Speaking of sustainable,
uh-huh.
We saw some solar panels being installed yesterday.
That's right. We took a trip,
mm-hmm.
and it is basically a former grass field, actually grass, like commercial grass.
Literal type grass field, a sod farm.
Yeah, those guys that come with the truck and put the, yeah, well, this is where it comes from. It looks like they subdivided it, and it's this massive stretch that mm-hmm. they're busily working on, and you can see the whole evolution of how they're doing it. They're doing it very, very quickly. I love the energy and action involved. Mm-hmm. They were very busy, and it's really exciting to see how physically it works and what it takes to get that infrastructure in. It's
they
cool.
were busy on Columbus Day.
Yes.
Columbus Day, a holiday.
On a holiday.
Like, basically commemorating the founding of this country, which did not exist before Christopher Columbus stepped on it and said, here I am.
Yes.
You know, and that shows how little respect these solar people have for this great nation by working on Columbus Day like that
mm-hmm.
to put renewable energy in. But, yeah, it's in Shoreham, site of the former nuclear power plant, which we also saw, by the way.
We visited there as well, and yeah. It's really interesting what they're doing, like how that's changed. And in fact, I think the utility formerly known as Long Island Power Authority,
which was formerly known as LOCO.
LOCO.
Long Island Lighting Company.
Yeah.
Well, they were widely hated.
Nobody liked them.
No.
Well, they actually still maintain that site. There are two jet engines there
uh-huh.
that basically are fixed. They don't move anywhere. They're a fixed installation, but they're really called gas turbines. They're also on cruise ships and stuff for power generation. There are two of them. 50 megawatt, I believe, is their maximum trick outableness. But anyway, they supply power using the same switchable gear system that would have been coming off of the steam turbine there. So they've sort of retrofitted it to use gas, and they also co-locate other stuff for the utility there. And they have looked into erecting large wind turbines, like the real kind, the big, big ones. They wanted two. They looked at six different sites. They looked at the possibility of three turbines. And I think that would be really cool to put right where this old reactor building was
uh-huh.
In a real show of, well, demonstrating. I mean, they have to look at the transmissions. They have to look at how these wind turbines work, get it in the shop, so to speak, and look under the hood, figure out how operationally they would do that, and then maybe look at other sites. It's a really exciting thing, and to have the solar panels right across the way, also very, very exciting.
Well, what we should mention, for those who don't know, is that the Shoreham Nuclear Power Plant was a widely contested nuclear plant that never actually was completed here on Long Island. It was the only one on Long Island that made it to that stage. There were, I believe, three others or two others that were proposed. There was Jamesport out east. There was Lloyd Harbor. I think that's out west somewhere. I don't even know, to be honest.
Uh-huh.
Do you know at one point they wanted to build a nuclear power plant on in that part of Queens, right next to Roosevelt Island? You can see the smokestacks as you cross the Queensboro Bridge. That's how short-sighted these people
that's
were.
That's way too close.
A nuclear power plant in New York City. So
anybody could have told you that. Nobody wants to be near that.
A lot of cooler heads nice. Prevailed, but we still had to get to the point of shutting down this nuclear power plant. And I was part of that. That was one of the first things I was involved in when I came to Stony Brook, was helping in that anti-nuclear fervor that was starting to catch on. And it took a while. It was right after, we were looking it up actually yesterday as we were driving by it.
Mm-hmm.
It was 1979, right after Three Mile Island happened,
mm-hmm.
that there was predictably a lot of anti-nuclear spirit in the country. There had been before.
Strong sentiment.
This really gave it a lot of energy. No pun intended.
Too close to home. Yeah, definitely.
And I remember that day. It was on June 3rd in 1979 when all these people gathered on the beach. It was a rainy day, but I think over 10,000 people, maybe 15,000 people gathered on the beach to protest. I wasn't a part of that. I was a part of the civil disobedience. I think about 600 or so people got arrested climbing the fence at Shoreham. I actually was handcuffed to Dave Dallinger, one of the 1960s protest leaders, and right next to Jerry Rubin because the two of them were hanging out together.
Wow.
I just somehow happened to be right next to them, which was really, really interesting. That's and I also, crazy. I remember this too. This is also kind of interesting.
Sure.
The number that was on Dave Dallinger's registration, I guess, when you get arrested, you get a number, was the same number as the cop who arrested him, which I thought was really funny. And
whoa.
I pointed it out to him, and he thought it was funny too, and that was pretty much the extent of my contact. But that was a magical day because it really felt like we were doing something. We were making change. Literally, thousands of people walking through the rainy streets of Shoreham, Long Island, on that day in June, making history. And I got to say, the cops treated us very well. They were very respectful of us. They treated us nicely while we were in jail. Everybody got bailed out or let go and got ACLDs. Nobody really, I don't think, got in trouble. And eventually that plant was shut down. The government changed and the feelings changed. And it just was basically seen as a very bad idea. The thing is, so much money was spent on that plant. That it was a huge waste. I think you looked up the figures yesterday, how much we continue to pay for it, right? It was something like 3% of our electric bill or something?
Well, the cost originally was $6 billion to build it, and then $50 million to move the fuel. Maybe okay. $6 million to...
Cost a lot of money.
You can look it up.
Yeah, but I don't know how
I think
much.
It cost the same to build it as it did to shut it down.
Okay.
Like, just the bill to move the fuel, which was footed by a power utility in Pennsylvania, I guess, the bill was foot by them. It was $50 million to move it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of costs in remediating and cleaning up these places.
The thing that bugs me is that, that plant was widely supported by the locals of Shoreham. You know why? Because having a nuclear power plant in your backyard really brings down your property taxes quite a bit.
Oh, the cost. Yeah. It was amortized. Absolutely. The cost was added to LIPA customers' bill. So that was...
Oh, that's afterwards. I'm talking about
afterwards.
Before.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Before. Basically, their property taxes went way down. They got great schools out of it. So they supported the nuclear power plant
being
there.
Those are the incentives, I see.
Incentives, yeah.
Yeah.
And now a lot of the people in the same area are raising hell over, oh my God, a solar farm that looks so ugly. It's just basically, light shining down on glass.
They
and
want
those will be the same people that will object to a wind turbine on the very site of the Shoreham nuclear power plant. It's insane.
Well, it's cynical, but honestly, you can't be surprised. People want whatever they can get.
Mm-hmm.
They see a good thing. How can I slip and fall? I mean, that's kind of there's an element of that, I think. And then people, they see something going up in their backyard. They know, oh, there's a lot of money. Oh, that's some new metal you got there. That kind of gets into, well, what can I get out of this?
Look, when you put a nuclear power plant in your backyard, you lose your right to complain about anything else that goes up in your backyard.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
I think
so. And the thing that also gets me is the number of people today, intelligent people today, that are pro-nuclear because they see it as contributing less fossil fuels and being less pollutant. What they fail to realize is the tremendous cost of running nuclear power plants as far as what do you do with the waste?
Yeah, we were talking about ships, how ship reactors are stored a couple weeks ago.
And how are they stored?
They're stored in an open pit
uh-huh.
on the Hanford site, which is actually where the B reactor was historically located, and that was the reactor that made the plutonium that did all of the research and wartime use for early nuclear weapons.
And that's
testing.
Out in Washington State, right?
Yeah, and it's now a historical landmark. They're trying to do tours there now, apparently.
That's low-level radiation, right? That they...
Correct. It's deemed low level. It's uh-huh. not stuff you want to be around, but it's safed, in other words, so that they can store it. And it just sits in an open pit, basically on the site, because that site itself is perpetually being cleaned up and will take some time to be less toxic it's a lot better now, and there's been some mismanagement and stuff at the site, but it's this sort of logical place because it's itself is very toxic. Well, so let's just dump stuff there too.
There's other waste too that comes from nuclear power plants that has to be stored deeply, right, and kept away from humans for a long, long time.
Yeah, that's like highly enriched stuff and so on. But some of these reactors, I think, use different types of nuclear fuels. I'm not 100% sure. And some of these can use mixed types of fuels and so on. So it gets a little murky and there's a lot of details.
Well, the thing that I think turned me against nuclear power was hearing people talking about nuclear waste and how, yeah, it has to be safeguarded for, you know, anything from several thousand years to several hundred thousand years. And just them thinking that, yeah, we'll be able to do this, no problem. You know, we'll just put up a sign or something like that, or just keep it secure. Just basically thinking that they would actually be able to pull that off for that amount of time and just not caring about future generations. There may be future for nuclear power plants when we are more advanced and can deal with the waste in a more logical way. But burying it in the ground, no, that's not the way to do it. And, you know, with earthquakes and changes in regimes and people losing track of history, there's no way you can keep something like that safe for that amount of time.
Yeah, the science is interesting. And it's, I mean, there's a lot of virtues to nuclear science in general, but I don't think it scales up quite the way, I mean, the waste scales up with it. So when you try to manage, it's used in a lot of countries, used around the world a lot, but it,
like
it
Japan
has, yeah, like Japan. So anyway, it is not without, problems, but I don't know. I mean, there's smaller sorts of reactors. There's a lot of interesting stuff that you can do, but I don't think it scales up. It should not be how diffuse communities, like with a centralized power generation system, solve their power needs. I think that should be more of a local effort.
I just looked this up, actually. I just typed in nuclear waste from nuclear power plants, and this one sentence kind of bugs me a little bit that shows up. Currently, there are no permanent disposal facilities in the United States for high-level nuclear waste. Therefore, commercial high-level waste, known as spent fuel, is in temporary storage, mainly at nuclear power plants.
Yeah.
So if you have a nuclear power plant in your backyard, you have some spent fuel, some high-level nuclear waste there as well. And it's temporary until we destroy ourselves, I guess.
This was the whole debate about Yucca Mountain years and years ago, where they were wanting to, in, I think, conjunction with dearmament stuff, proposing to glassify nuclear waste. In other words, make vases and no, I'm kidding. Make very large plugs or whatever, maybe smaller little pucks of glass or crystallized. I don't know how you would do it, but turn it into sort of a solid form and then store it deep in a mountain. And I think that was never allowed or it did not ever get built. I don't think so. But well, that's the kind of arrogance attached to it. It's like, well, we don't really have, it's not closed loop, right? And we don't really have a great way to deal with the outcome, and it's hard to work with. I don't know, unless you have a whole lot of robots, you know, people have to handle it at some point, and it's really it's not good for humans to be around in general. So anyway,
yeah, and it's exactly that arrogance. That's what I think bothered me. Is I, of course, we'll be able to deal with this, and you know, I love science, I love development of new technologies, but sometimes people just make assumptions that they know best and that they can't possibly make mistakes, and that people who just who don't get it are simply idiots and have to be talked down to or ignored completely. Something like this, way too important to just ignore. So, yeah, fossil fuels are definitely bad. But to say nuclear power is the solution is really, really being short-sighted. And we have these other solutions that we need to embrace and expand upon. And seeing great things out east with that solar plant being built.
Yeah, that's great. And people can control it. Like, They can be around it and check it and all of that. So exciting stuff. And that's really cool technology. I like that stuff. The stuff that is sort of like mimics nature and is sort of closed loop and so on and so forth. Uh-huh. And there's a lot of really, really exciting stuff happening there. And a lot of the products and parts and things you need are getting affordable. So it's cool.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. This is interesting. I told you about this story a little earlier. It's leaving the Earth now. It's going to another place. An article just came out in the Atlantic called "The Most Mysterious Star in Our Galaxy." And you know, I hate these articles that have pictures of stars, but they're actually just artist renderings. You notice that when NASA says they discovered blue skies on Pluto, and then you see an artist rendering of Pluto instead of the actual picture, which you know, is what people really want to see. So in this particular case, you're not really seeing anything except a bunch of stars that might not even be stars.
Or some sawdust that somebody forgot to sweep up.
Yeah, yeah. Show us the pictures, for God's sake. You know, it should be on the front page of the New York Times every day as a new picture from Hubble, because there's always something incredible and amazing to share. But anyway, this is really something. There's going to be a little bit of it. And maybe folks can do a little bit more research. In the Northern Hemisphere sky, hovering above the Milky Way, there are two constellations, Cygnus the Swan and Lyra the Harp. You know what? That's not important at all, actually. Anyway, between those constellations, there's an unusual star, invisible to the naked eye, but visible to the Kepler Space Telescope, which stared at it for more than 4 years, beginning back in 2009. They say, we've never seen anything like this. It was really weird. We thought it might be bad data or movement on the spacecraft, but everything checked out. Kepler was basically looking for tiny dips in the light emitted by the star. Instead, it was looking for these dips in more than 150,000 stars simultaneously, because these dips are often shadows cast by transiting planets, especially when they repeat periodically, as you'd expect if they were caused by orbiting objects. So anyway, what is this all about? As a light pattern, it basically suggests that there's a big mess of matter circling the star in tight formation. This is apparently something that's expected if the star was young, because there's dust and rock and all that kind of thing that that would be there. But this star isn't young. If it were young, it would be surrounded by dust. It would give off extra infrared light. There doesn't seem to be an excess of infrared light around the star. It appears to be mature. And yet there is this mess of objects circling it, a mess big enough to block a substantial number of photons that would have otherwise beamed into the tube of the Kepler Space Telescope, which, by the way, is one of the most amazing things in the world, you know, that we can look through these telescopes and see things like this and learn things like this. Just that is probably some of the best science ever.
Yeah.
And I am just so amazed by it sometimes. So basically, I'm skipping way ahead here. Let's see. Hang on. It's a very long article. It's worth reading. It's in the Atlantic. It just came out. They are saying that. Hang on. I'm sorry. Looking for the actual dramatic thing here. Okay, Jason Wright, an astronomer from Penn State University, is set to publish an alternative interpretation of the light pattern. SETI researchers have long suggested that we might be able to detect distant extraterrestrial civilizations by looking for enormous technological artifacts orbiting other stars. Wright and his co-authors say the unusual star's light pattern is consistent with a, quote, swarm of megastructures, unquote, perhaps stellar light collectors, technology designed to catch energy from the star. When I saw the data, I was fascinated by how crazy it looked, Wright said. Aliens should always be the very last hypothesis you consider, but this looked like something you would expect an alien civilization to build. So that's the wow story of this year, I think.
Wow.
This could actually be something, something that could show another civilization. What they're going to do, though, they're going to point a massive radio dish at this star, see if it emits any kind of radio waves at frequencies associated with technological activity. If they see radio waves, they're going to follow up with the, and this is what they call it, the Very Large Array, VLA, in New Mexico. which may be able to say whether the radio waves were emitted by a technological source like those that waft out into the universe from Earth's network of radio stations, including this one.
That is awesome.
Yeah. And assuming all goes well, the first observation will take place in January, with the follow-up coming next fall. And if things go really well, the follow-up could happen sooner. If we saw something exciting, we could ask the director for special allotted time on the VLA, and in that case, we'd be asking to go on right away. I'm not sure how far away this story is, because obviously things can't travel faster than the speed of light. So mm-hmm. if it's, you know, a few million light years away, then what we're looking at already happened a long time ago. Mm-hmm. But it could be closer. The fact that it's invisible doesn't mean it's necessarily vastly distant.
Or maybe we could turn it on, like, with the right radio frequency, like open it like a garage door and, you know, turn
hey,
the light
you tune
on.
Into the right frequency and all of a sudden you're going to be hearing all kinds of distant programming.
I would love to watch some alien programming.
Well, right now Rick and Morty is the closest you'll get to that.
Yes, you're right.
And we saw the space station after the show last week.
We did.
Did anybody else see that? We announced it. We said 16 minutes after the show, there would be a space station. And you know what? We forgot. We were driving, and suddenly I screeched to a halt, and I realized it was 16 minutes after 7, and we jumped out of the car and looked at it, and there it was.
It was one of the longest, really hung out there, just the whole arc, right through the middle. It was really exciting to see. And then it drifted away. It just fell over some new construction on campus.
Yes.
That was that.
Yeah. Well, it was still exciting to see, and I hope some of our listeners were able to see it as well, because this kind of thing really is inspirational.
Yes.
You want to try taking phone calls? I know you have everything all set up over there. And
I'll try.
We had to bypass. Yes, it's on Channel 9 this week, not Channel 8. Yeah, that's Channel 8, so turn that one down, turn channel, it's really not hard. Channel 8, yes, turn that down, turn channel 9 up next to it. The one to the right, yes. All right. Great. That's it. And now
I
patched
there?
Around it because it was broken
wow,
before.
You're
remember?
Brilliant.
No, I'm not brilliant. I'm just, it's basically
surviving.
I counted up by one is all I did. So everything's
okay,
perfect.
Okay, I'm going to switch us over.
This is Robert Klein speaking to you from WUSB, Stony Brook, New York. Get me out of here.
And here we are.
Did you switch us while you were playing the ID? It sounded like you did both things at once.
Should I play it again?
No. No, don't.
I'm sorry. I might have cut off the ID.
Yeah, we might be split in two. So some of us might have appeared in the past and then ID, and then we finished our sentence. That's the nature of delay. We can take phone calls if you want.
Okay, so
just make sure you put that channel in the right position too.
Hello, you're on WUSB.
Yeah, hi Manny, hi everybody.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
You know, a couple of details on that Shoreham story. The solar installation is going to displace many gophers as well as golfers. But
gophers.
I want to point out it's the Tallgrass golf course.
Okay. Well, you're talking about a different one because the one we saw was on a sod farm. I think there are two of them out there.
Yeah, but that's going to kill the golf course too, so which is fine.
You know, there's other golf courses. There's lots of them.
Oh, yeah, we got plenty of them.
Yeah.
What we didn't have many of was the evacuation.
That's certainly true, and that's another thing that really turned me against nuclear power was seeing all the evacuation sirens in a 10-mile radius. You know, that kind of made things a little nerve-wracking.
Well, one of the interesting sites that they had picked was that 10-plex movie site up on the North Service Road just east of 112, the site that they wanted to use for a casino now. So the people don't want a casino. They didn't want a evac site, but they had no actual authority to even, you know, appropriate that site as an evacuation site back in the day.
Yeah. Interesting.
Just like the Nassau Coliseum, you know, with the 5 showers that they were going to use for people to clean themselves off with. And so they passed out the handy wipes to wipe the cars off.
Uh-huh. Wow. Some good history here.
Yeah, but you know what? I always felt that, I'll get off the air and let somebody else on, but I always felt you could get quite a few low-paid workers to, you know, with a bicycle chain sprocket set up, like, and for many, many lifetimes, for the amount of money that they spent out there, they could be peddling that turbine away.
not a bad idea, and getting a lot of exercise at the same time.
That's true. That's true. Put people to work.
Where are you calling from?
Great night.
All right. Take care.
Hello, you're on WSB.
Hi, this is Joseph. I just want to let them know that I love the show, but Bernie Sanders was never governor of Vermont.
Oh, he wasn't? Oh, my mistake.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow, okay.
Thank you for the fact check.
He was mayor of Burlington, was he?
Burlington.
Okay, that's it?
But he was senator. Went away from there to Congress.
Senator Bernie Sanders, yeah.
I'm red-faced with shame.
Two senators, yeah.
Okay, he wasn't governor. Wow.
I mention that because in the New Yorker, I think two issues ago, there was a big article about Bernie, who I am very much in favor of.
Uh-huh.
And they say that some of his critics say that it's interesting that he's been voted senator so many times, but couldn't be elected governor. And they feel that the Vermont folks there don't mind, and this is a quote from, I think it's a quote, I don't have it in front of me, from the New Yorker magazine, saying they don't mind throwing a hand grenade into the Senate,
uh-huh,
but they don't want him governing the whole state.
Interesting. I wonder if there's any truth to that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, he certainly isn't somebody who just goes with the flow. He's going to, say what he means and try to make it happen.
Put people on their ear, so to speak.
Exactly.
Well, is there anything you're looking for in tonight's debate?
Well, I just would like to see Bernie stand out and really try to. I think he has a year to explain to people what democratic socialism is. I think once they understand what it is, they won't be against it.
Well, that's a tough sell in this country, especially. We still are suffering from the Red Scare. And I don't know. I don't know if you can say that you're a socialist in any sense and get enough votes here. It'd be nice, to see people get a little bit more enlightened as to what that actually means. But I don't think that's going to happen in the next year.
But he's already moved the party to be against the pipeline and the whole Trans-Pacific deal.
Yeah, he could do tremendous things as far as moving the party in one direction and making it more progressive. That would be amazing. That might be the best we can hope for.
To a certain extent.
Yeah, he certainly has. And hopefully tonight will be another opportunity to do that.
A great show, guys.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thanks for your call.
Yeah, so that's definitely something to keep in mind, that he could change the conversation a bit.
Yeah, it's going to be a new conversation, I think. Yeah. A little bit different pace than the previous ones for the other parties.
It'll be like adults. This is the adult conversation now.
The big kid table.
Well, it's just ridiculous, some of the things that they were saying the last couple of Republican debates. Things about immigrants and global warming and just a lot of stupid things, really.
Yeah, hopefully the quality of dialogue and stuff will be a little better as far as abject intolerance and so on.
631-632-6901 is our telephone number. I'd like to hear what they have to say about gun control and immigration and international relations and which country they're going to bomb, and things like that.
Yes, those are all at the top of my list as well. Again, the phone number, 631-632-6901, 26901 if you're on campus.
And if you're on that mysterious star, we don't know what number you have to dial to get out. But you can probably figure it out. You're a more advanced civilization. Call
the operator.
Call information. They'll tell you. But the thing I wanted to mention, though, and this is something I mentioned to you, we're talking about solar farms and things like that. And I was wondering, why on earth can't they also put wind turbines on solar farms?
Co-locate.
All this space, right? You stick a wind turbine, every few whatever, however distant you place them apart from each other, you have this open area with wind. You could be generating both kinds of electricity in the same place.
It's like a sort of renewable hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that actually does work, and it actually works really well. I know this because I've seen different kinds of houses, like Earthship style houses, and when you are running your own bank of batteries, a mixed use is actually preferred. It's helpful. Instead of just having one or the other, especially if you live in a place that doesn't have sun all the time. So that's why for small setups, you'd have maybe a small wind turbine as well as a small panel. For larger stuff, I think they commit or invest in one or the other, but it would be interesting, and I think as it matures, you'll see better use of these technologies and mixing and the standards supporting that across types of new forms of energy.
You know, it'd be cool to have some kind of technologies, of course, in the future, where at night a wind turbine sprouts out of the ground and works all night long and then goes back in and the solar panels take over.
Like retractable.
Why not?
Kind of like a telescoping antenna on an old car.
I have no idea how to build these things, but I do know how to come up with ideas.
No, I like that. Yeah. That's really good. I would just love to watch that move up and down like a bullard.
Uh-huh. So you scientists out there, take some notes and maybe we could invent something together. It'd be kind of cool.
Yes. And if you're taking notes and you would like to shape those notes, wordsmith them into the form of a letter. We accept letters, and you can write to otw@2600.com, and we'll read it, and we may even read it on the air. If you don't want us to read it on the air, just tell us, and we won't. But we'd love to hear your comments. We'd also love to take your call. We're taking calls tonight, 631-632-6901. This is WUSB. You're listening to Off the Wall with Kyle and Emmanuel.
Hello. And we only have about a minute left to take phone calls, so if you're going to call, do it now.
Yeah, and you know we may not have time because guess what? It's fundraising season. Yeah.
Next week it begins.
It's the harvest, reap what you sow, mega extrava radio donate-a-thon, and we're bringing that to you, live and direct.
Did you know so many things that were reaping out east yesterday?
Reaping hard, yeah.
I mean, so many crops.
It's when you'd go and you get the pumpkins, and you and people are saddling up to carving them now, I bet.
There's corn and bear. There's a phone call.
We have a phone call, please. Oh, it just went away.
It went away?
It's like a thought. It just,
don't get nervous,
it's
people.
Fleeting.
We don't bite, at least not over the phone. All right, give him another 30 seconds, or her another 30 seconds.
631-632-6901.
We're not even asking for funds.
26901 if you're on campus. We know there are a lot of students out there, probably getting ready for midterms.
There's a phone call, quickly.
Hello, you're on WUSB.
Yeah, the Brookhaven National Lab has a reactor.
They have a very tiny reactor, you're right, they do. Is that it generates like a really minimal amount of power just for experimentation, right?
No, actually, it generates a great amount of power because they have they had the largest cryogenic atom splitter, you know, the circular
particle accelerator.
Particle accelerator, that's right.
Yes.
And a few years ago, they had a balloon festival, and a couple of firemen friends of mine that worked there had to confiscate a balloon that wandered into the property, and they had to incinerate it with all the clothes and everything else because it was in a area that had runoff from the reactor and
pumps
in the ground.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
We have to look into this a little more. Okay, I knew they had something. I didn't know it was something of that scale.
Yeah, wow. Now they don't have a balloon festival there anymore.
Yeah.
Wow.
Get it together, Brookhaven.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, to be continued. Right, thank you.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Our window on delay is closing, so we need to exit delay.
All right, quick, get the exit delay device, and...
And we're out of delay.
And we're way, way out of delay. And
now the phone calls are pouring in. You see, this always happens.
Gosh,
every
so
time.
Many calls.
Look, before we leave, though, a couple of exciting bits of news. Euro 2016 is happening next year, but the qualifying matches have been taking place. And this time... There are countries that have qualified for next year's, it's kind of like a mini World Cup only in Europe, countries like Wales and Northern Ireland and Albania and Iceland and Slovakia, they've all qualified. And in many cases, it's the first time they've ever qualified.
I love that Albania made it because we've been there.
Uh-huh.
And it was neat. And that's just, it is a real... Interesting mix, as you pointed out.
Two teams, though, that failed to qualify were former champions Greece and the Netherlands, the latter being absent from Euro for the first time in 32 years. They actually lost a division to Iceland. How is that possible? Iceland has, like, the number of people that Stony Brook has, and they were able to beat the Netherlands in that group. I'm blown away by it. I'm all in favor of it, too.
Well, practice. I mean, they're doing something right. I don't know.
All right, Iceland. We're rooting for you, I guess.
I'm excited. And I can't wait. I want to watch some of these games for real.
You'll have to wait till next June.
Ah, darn.
All right, we're out of here. Again, otw@2600.com is our email address. Finn's up next. I guess we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening.
kids, what it is, Finn's Revolution, till 9 p.m. right here on WUSB, Stony Brook. Tonight we have film producer Dan Braun, who's going to be talking about his movie that's showing this Monday night, and we'll have some tickets for it over at the Port Jefferson Documentary Film Festival, and also Rashmi Singh, a great, great, great singer, songwriter. Stay tuned. Yes, that was Camille, of course, right here, who we've become a little familiar with lately. I've been playing a bunch of her stuff. And yeah, we're in the midst of Radiothon right now, which means you can call and pledge if you like what you hear. We're going to be hitting you a little harder a little later. But if you want to call right now and pledge any amount to WUSB, you can give us a call. $15, $5, $10, $25, $1 million, whatever you want to pledge. 631-632-6000. 1-800-273-9901. I'm going to be hitting you a little harder after this first interview, so make it now, so this way you're guilt-free and you can live with yourself, you know, for the rest of the evening. 631-632-6901. Film producer Dan Braun, award-winning film producer, is going to be on with us in just a few moments. Has done some fantastic, fantastic Academy Award-winning work, and we're going to talk to him and his new about his new film about Peggy Guggenheim in just a few moments. But way back when, Dan he played in some bands, including this one, the Del Byzantines, right here on WUSB Stony Brook. Okay, so those are the Del Byzantines featuring Dan Braun on bass or drums. I'm not sure what he's on this one, but we're going to also hear something right now from one of his old bands, Deep Six, which is a super cool band that I saw a bunch of times way back in the day, back when the Ray Beats were playing live and all those things. And just a few moments, Dan Braun, filmmaker, former post-punk rocker, No Waiver, shall be on the air with us. Stay tuned.